This is episode number 776 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Hudson Valley Comic Con, the April comics sales numbers, and the new Dread TV series, as well as our summer reading and watching projects. Our comics this week will be Scarlet Spider number 1, Captain Canuck Year 1 number 1, Warhammer 40K Dawn of War number 1, and Batman the Shadow number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
Seconds to comply.
God clean, wholesome fun.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here as always with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well with a Penguins victory and one more rung on the ladder till another Stanley Cup.
Yeah, 7-game series to get out of this round. So
those are interesting. And when you're the deciding team, and then all of a sudden your best player gets taken out, and then you're wondering what's going on. Apparently, the power of the Penguin.
Those 7-game series are always more exciting when you've already won and you're on to the next series. Then you can look back on them and be like, "Wow, what a great series!" Yeah. Right? But while you're in it, you're like, "Oh, this is too much."
Yeah. They were saying that this was probably going to be better than the Stanley Cup final having these two teams playing together. They hate each other. It was very evident they hate each other.
Yep.
And at least we got a result that I wanted.
I'll tell you, two people that don't hate each other, and that's you and I, Matthew.
Yes, we don't.
Let's jump into our news, and let's start off with your trip this past weekend to the Hudson Valley Comic Con.
Yes, that was a ton of fun. Again, I love Poughkeepsie, New York. I have fallen in love with that place. There is just so much fun stuff to do there. It is such a really interesting town where you've got, you know, beautiful lush greens where the show was at a Gold's Gym. And then you go over to the Chance and you have like that old school downtown.
Yep.
And it's just a really, really, really cool place. But this show, the second annual, and it was another one of those shows where it's opening at 10 and you're like, where are all the people? And then you go outside and you see that there are hundreds, if not thousands, waiting to get in. The attendance was better than they expected, which was great for them. The I went down with Andrew Edge, who did the cover of my UFO book. So Andrew and I shared a table together. Keith and Amy were there. They had a great time. The there were a couple, like Scott Wee was there. Caesar, oh boy, I forgot
Feliciano.
His name. Caesar Feliciano made the trip down. He was right in my eye shot. The Doctor Who restaurant, the Pandorica, had a booth there.
Very
so
nice.
So I was able to eat and enjoy fish sticks and custard. Actually gave
them
a try.
Which everybody knows that you love.
And it wasn't terrible, so that was pretty good. I did my Doctor Who panel, and it was interesting. So at 11 o'clock, and you'll get a kick out of this, 11 o'clock, there's like 6 people. And Scott was coming to the show thing. He's like, "I've never been to a panel." I'm like, "Well, there might be 5 people there. There could be 200. You never know." And he thought when it started, because he looked around, he's like, "Wow, there's only like 6 or 7 people." 15, 20 minutes in, there was probably 100 or so people.
Uh-huh.
Finished the panel. Thought, you know, and I don't know if you do it. You probably do. But after I finish, I'm like, "Yeah, that wasn't that good. I bombed her. This wasn't one of my better ones." And I was starting to think, yep, I could have done this one a little bit different. I didn't think the people were responding very well. And all of a sudden, I'm saying goodbye. People are clapping. I'm walking off. And it was on a stage, too.
Yep.
So I'm walking off the stage. The guy who was moderating all the panels came up and said, "Hey, the next panel isn't here yet. Do you want to do another half hour?" Yeah. So I went right back up on stage and then took questions from everybody and just had a ton of fun talking to people. So I think I ended up finishing up, like, I did 45 extra minutes.
Yep.
And I'm like, I got to get to my table. So I got back to the table and sold probably 8 or 9 books off that panel, which is, when you do panels, that's kind of what you're hoping to do. You're hoping to get at least a little buzz to get people to what you're trying to do and sell, if you're doing a panel that's in relation to something that you've done.
Right.
So it was a lot of fun. The show just was great. I would say, as far as staff and the security and the promoters, They do a great job. Dylan and Kayla are just fantastic. And they're out there walking around the entire time. And they're not – they're also bringing water to people. They're talking to the vendors. They're not just walking up to vendors going, so how are your sales going? Because I never got asked that once. I got asked every time by either Dylan or Kayla or a couple of the other people, having fun, how's everything going? That was what I'd rather hear than how are your sales. Because to me, they just are trying to cultivate that fun. And that's exactly what a show should be. This is one that I will be there again next year. I'm hoping that Keith and Amy, I haven't spoken to them about it, but I know they were doing well. Hopefully they want to go back next year. And
were they near you at all, or were they?
They were right behind.
Oh, okay.
They were right behind. And the show, which was really cool, was this year we were put all on the soccer field, an indoor soccer field.
That's cool.
So you're walking on soft,
I like that,
AstroTurf with the little rubber pellets.
So that's 10 times better than standing on hard concrete,
yes,
which is what you're usually standing on.
That's exactly
at a lot of
what
shows.
We do.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun, and congratulations to those guys, and I cannot wait for number 3.
Awesome. Let's talk about some comics sales numbers, Matthew.
Yes.
The April sales numbers are in. Obviously, it's the middle of May now, but we come to these things a little bit late. You know, I get around to them.
I did a story, I think, on Monday about the sales numbers in February.
There you go. Yeah.
So we're right on this.
So we're pretty close this time around. Marvel Comics Secret Empire number 0 and DC Comics Batman number 21 and The Flash number 21, both of which you reviewed in the last episode,
yes,
I believe, which is the start of the 4-part The Button crossover, couldn't stop April 2017's direct market comic book sales from falling over 13% versus last year, as signs continue to point to the industry being in the midst of its first sales decline in 5 years, yep, Matthew. This is coming from Newsarama, by the way. According to sales figures released by Diamond Comic Distributors Friday morning, Secret Empire number 0 was the most ordered comic book of the month, followed by the lenticular cover of Batman number 21. The standard version of Batman number 21 also cracked the top 10 on its own. At number 7, Marvel also debuted 3 Resurrection titles in the top 10, X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue number 1 as the 3rd and 4th best-selling titles, respectively, and Weapon X number 1 at 9. Two of those I reviewed, I believe, in the last episode or two of that. Batman Volume 2, I Am Suicide, was the best-selling graphic novel for the month. Marvel took both market share categories in April with a 34.95% dollar share and a 38.23% unit share, compared to the $30.49 and $34.34 unit share for DC. So, I mean, it's still pretty close.
Yes.
But the real takeaway from April is that overall sales versus April 2016, both for shipping weeks they each had in both those months, was down 13.18%. Both publishing categories were down significantly, with comic books dipping 11.28% in dollar sales and graphic novels dipping 17.8% from last year.
Wow.
Now, year to date, sales are now down 2.53% in comic book dollar sales and 12.41% in graphic novel dollars for an overall decline of 5.74%. It remains to be seen in the remaining 8 months if they can reverse the trend, in particular, the precipitous dip in graphic novel sales, down 12.41% for the year. So I'll just read you a couple more things, and then we can kind of reflect on that. So we talked about the retail market share. Marvel, 34.95%. DC, 30.49%. Image, 10.54%. So Image is up over 10% of the market share. Dark Horse comes in at 4th place, 4.46%. IDW behind them at 3.63%. And Boom behind them at 2.27%. For the top 10 books, Secret Empire number 0, Batman number 21, the lenticular cover, X-Men Gold number 1, X-Men Blue number 1, The Flash number 21, the lenticular cover, Batman number 20, Batman number 21, the standard edition, Star Wars number 30, Weapon X number 1, and The Walking Dead number 166 is in the top 10.
Yes.
Now, a little bit of controversy about that, Matthew. I don't know if you saw the hullabaloo on the old social medias over the past week or so.
Is it about the not combining the...
That is correct,
yes,
Matthew. So if people have not figured that out from the numbers that we just read, you'll notice that there was 2 versions of Batman number 21. One came in at number 2 and one came in at number 7. and they are counted separately, even though they are the exact same comic, because one has a lenticular cover and is a little bit more expensive, and the other is the standard edition of that yep. book. Now, what was the big hullabaloo was that Nick Spencer had gone on to Twitter, and Marvel was sort of tooting their horn as well as having the number one selling book for April in Secret Empire number zero. But that's only if you don't count the two versions of Batman number 21 together, because when you do, both Batman number 21 and Flash number 21 sold more copies than Secret Empire number zero.
Yep. So it was an interesting thing to see that. And, I know a lot of people were saying that, oh, it's, you know, Marvel holding the screws to Diamond and the numbers and making sure that whatever they do to separate it to give that number one to a Marvel book, the price point is kind of what sells books, because they break it down to, there'll be a thing in there that says $3.99 books, $2.99, $5.99. So they'll break it down to what was the number one selling $3.99 book. I looked at it and thought, you know what? Combine the two and you got the number one book. I know bragging rights are there, and that's very important. But I do think right now the most important thing is you're looking at the market share side of it. And what can possibly be done to get the ship righted with the sales?
Right.
And the other thing that I thought was, too, is that nobody is saying anything like, you know, everybody's like, oh, Batman should be number one. Well, you know what? Flash is in the top 10 for the first time in probably ever.
Clearly it's getting the Batman bump.
Yes, it's getting the Batman bump, and it's getting a solid bump because it is an amazing story. You came here today to record. I was at the store because I did not get a copy of Batman 21 yet. So I had to run down to another store to go find it because I am so fired up and hooked about this story, and I've talked to a lot of people about it. They feel the same way. So, you know, there's my thing. You know, you look at the controversy. Yeah, I'd rather have Batman selling more than that. You know, DC selling more than Marvel. I'm a DC guy, but I'm just psyched that people are there really fired up about this story.
Well, and I think you're right in the sense that if you are either one of those companies, what you really are thinking about, hopefully, and I'm sure they are, is how do we keep that momentum going, yep. right? So if you're Secret Empire, even if the numbers are a little wishy-washy, you are listed as the top-selling book for the month of mm-hmm. April at Secret Empire. So you want to keep that momentum going, right? So you want to use that as part of your marketing. So it's no surprise that Marvel and Nick Spencer are out there touting that, hey, this is the number one selling book, because they're trying to combat a lot of the negative headlines that have been coming out.
Marvel.
And the sort of internet piling on that's happening right now when it comes to wanting to sort of take Marvel out at the knees for mm-hmm. the storyline that they're doing in Captain America with Secret Empire. And so obviously they're going to do that. Obviously they're going to toot their own horn. But things that they should be figuring out how to keep the momentum on, the X-Men books, right? You've got two X-Men books that are now right up there in the top 10. How do you keep that going?
Yep.
You know, you've got, like you said, Flash gets the bump over at DC. How do you keep that going? How do you make sure that when the Batman event is over, people who came over to Flash because of this crossover event that's happening actually stick on Flash?
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to retain everybody, but how do you keep that momentum going over there? So that's the stuff, hopefully, that they should be thinking about. As far as the market overall, the fact that it's down year over year is a concern,
mm-hmm.
and you want to figure that out. Clearly, graphic novel sales are taking even more of a hit than single issue sales. So that's interesting to me, because my thought was over the past few years that people are moving more toward graphic novels and less toward individual, you know, issues,
yeah.
because a lot of stories are written for the trade, because people want to have that trade for their bookshelf, and it's easier to just grab things. You know, it's so hard to keep up with, especially these books that are shipping twice a month, that in some cases you just throw your hands up and say, okay, well, when it gets collected in the trade,
yep.
I'll jump in and I'll collect that particular story. Or, you know, there's so many Batman stories coming out, I will pick and choose the ones that I pick up and trade and stuff like that. And so that surprises me a little, that it's the graphic novel sales that are going down. But who's to say? I mean, and we could see the numbers go right back up in May.
Yeah. There might be, I think last year, it wasn't last year, we were almost, I think we were looking again at the death knell of comics. And
well, especially print comics,
yeah,
right?
And like then that happens every year. All of a sudden, we had this huge resurgence in sales. So you are going to have those ups and downs. Now, I think we should start panicking when it is – what were these? These were April numbers or May?
April numbers,
so
yeah.
So these are the April numbers. So if May declines, June declines, July declines, and August declines, then we should start getting a little panicky about what's going on. But right now, let's just enjoy some of the great books that we've had out. And interesting that I was really thinking a lot about the whole Secret Empire thing. We have been talking for years, and everybody has been talking about this. The companies need to let the creators tell their stories, and it finally seems like the creators were able to tell their stories, especially with what's going on with Secret Empire, and then the fans did not want that. You know, everybody started – because I've heard still in my circles I'm hearing more negative, and even people are coming up going, so Cap's a Nazi? And I'm like, yeah. Or Cap's a Hydra agent? Oh, yeah. Well, what's a Hydra agent? All people are hearing is that negative side. They don't get that part of it. And I'm like, you know, it's a story going on, and in 6 months, the story will resolve itself, and hopefully I'll walk away going, man, what a great story that was. And we've always just wanted the creators to be given the outlet to tell the story, and now somebody seems like they're able to tell a story a little out of the norm, and the fan outcry. It's almost making me feel, Brian, that comic fans just want to complain about things. Just me. Just me.
I don't think you're wrong. I think that and this happens of fans of every medium, yep. right? But I think a lot about music fans yep. as well, right? Your favorite band puts out a new album, and there is part of you that wants it to sound exactly like their old albums.
Yes.
And then there's part of you that wants to see them do something new, but in some ways, they're not going to be able to please you either way with what they do, right?
And oh, so by I the think, way, new Europe album in August.
Oh, I know.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I follow Europe news.
I just had to tell you that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited about that. They just finished recording that, and I think they recorded it in the studio that the Beatles recorded
Abbey Road
in, if
Studios
I'm not
in London.
Yeah, so... just to that's your music nerd minute that Matt and I yeah. Matt and I follow 80s band news like it's breaking world news.
Yeah.
So but yeah clearly people do like to complain. There is a ton of piling on around the Marvel thing. I'm not reading the Marvel thing. My do I think that Captain America should be in any way, shape, or form used for a storyline that implies that he is part of a group that has been so closely affiliated with Nazis over the years? No, I don't agree that this is a good idea or a good premise for a Marvel story. That said, I could care less about this event in the same way that I could care less about Civil War II.
Mm.
I'm not into Marvel's events anymore, and my biggest concern about where print comics are at, or even just the single-issue comics in general right now, is that to go back to your point of creators being able to tell stories, I feel like so often creators are handcuffed
yeah.
by these humongous events that have to affect every book in that's even remotely touching the main Marvel universe. And I think there's a better way to do that. Like, look at the situation with Batman and the Flash right now, right? So they have, what is it, a four or a six-issue crossover of the Batman. Okay, so this storyline in DC right now is called The Button. It is Batman and the Flash. It is a four-issue crossover, so it'll be two of each, right?
Yep.
I am totally cool with that. My commitment to understand that event is four issues.
Yes.
Now, I happen to read Batman and I happen to read The Flash, so I'm getting those two anyways. But if I was just buying Flash, I would completely pick up those two issues of Batman to fulfill that. The problem is that these major events have the, and you're going to talk about one today, the zero issue or mm-hmm. the setup issue, which is often $5 now that you have to buy into. Then they have the spin-off issues that are touching each one of the major characters that are involved. Then you have the main series, often which does not contain all of the storyline that you need for the series. So the commitment to jump into a summer event like that, to me, in a lot of ways, scares people off entirely.
Yeah.
So because I'm not buying Cap regularly anyways and I'm not reading the Avengers book, knowing that this is a huge summer event, I'm just not going to spend the $150, whatever it costs, to collect the entire event. You know what I mean? So for me, that's a type of event where I'm only in if it is a Spider-Man event at yep. this point in time. If it's my character, then maybe I'm in for it. If they do a Flash event, I'm in for it. But yeah, it to me, that's where the biggest problem lies, is this constant big event thing that's going on. And as we talk about ad nauseum, the constant reboots and rebirths and all new, all now, and all that kind of stuff. And that, to me, just dilutes the overall legacy and history of what these two companies have done forever. And it just, it makes me care less about having each one of those issues.
Yeah, and you brought up the best point of all this. If this was not a Captain America fueled event, I wouldn't be reading it. That just because it's Cap, that's why I'm doing it.
Right. If this was a Thor event, right?
If this was Thor, I would want nothing to do with it.
What do you care about that? Nope. So that's the thing. And so, yeah, I think they have bigger things to worry about. My hope as a comic book fan who's hard to please, like we all are, is that I would like to have a Marvel universe where everybody had 12 issues at a time to go and tell their stories. Mm. And you didn't have to worry about crossing over with anyone, and you didn't have to worry about your book getting canceled. Everybody gets 12 issues to tell their story. At the end of that, if a book's not selling, then maybe you cancel it. But they had time to tell their whole story. These series that are getting canceled before issue 12, or the constant revolving door of creators that are coming on a book, especially I feel like Marvel has fallen into that trap with artists. And there's been a lot of talk about the whole Marvel artist thing lately as well, but the lack of a consistent look on a book is really jarring to me. This is a visual medium. And even though I am a writer and I come for stories, the fact that a book doesn't have a consistent look over 12 issues to me is just mind-boggling.
Yep, I agree with that.
I don't understand that. That would seem to be the most important thing, is to establish a style for a particular book.
And I'm an artist chaser. That's what I do. And in the Out of the Long Box, I'm going to talk about a book that, to me, was the entire genre look. That when I read this book, I said, you know what? This is how I want every single one of my war comics to look.
Uh-huh.
And they did that. And back in the days, it seemed to be a little bit different. Like, you know, DC and Marvel certainly had their own feels to them. And it's kind of gone, that you don't have that anymore.
Yes. So we raised more questions. We have not solved any issues here, which is what we like to do here on this show. But I'm not going to hit the panic button just yet.
No.
It was a down April.
Yep.
Let's see what May brings. Well, I'll tell you what May did bring so far, Matthew. It brought us some exciting news. News that many have been clamoring for about 5 years now. If you remember a little-known film from 2012 named Dredd.
Yes.
Which arguably was the Judge Dredd movie that we have all been asking and waiting for, and we thought at the time was going to be the beginning of a new era for Judge Dredd on the big screen. Until, this was going to be the start.
Until we realized that the six of us in the theater on opening day was pretty much indicative of every theater in the world at that same moment.
It flopped in terms of the box office take, which is so frustrating because Dredd was so good.
Amazing.
Carl Urban was Judge Dredd.
Yes.
It was fantastic. It was a small story that was done supremely well and just was so disappointing that it didn't succeed. So people have been talking about a Netflix series. People have been talking about finding some way to make a sequel happen. Carl Urban's been talking about trying to find a way to make a sequel happen. And while we may not get Carl Urban again, we heard some very exciting news this week. So over on Entertainment Weekly, it was announced that there is going to be a Dredd TV series.
I love it.
That is starting to come together as we speak. I'm just going to read you their article. The character of Dredd, who is known for his incorruptibility, harsh attitude toward law-breaking perps, and upper face-concealing helmet, was created by writer John Wagner and artist Carlos Ezquerra in 1977 and first appeared in the British science fiction anthology 2000 AD, which celebrates its 40th anniversary this year.
Yes.
Happy anniversary.
Yep.
And if you haven't checked out, by the way, I'm digressing, the 2000 AD podcast. It's a great podcast. You should totally listen to it. It goes well beyond, obviously, Judge Dredd, but awesome, awesome podcast. Judge Dredd has twice been adapted for the big screen. Sylvester Stallone played the titular character in 1995's Judge Dredd, while Carl Urban, as we just discussed, portrayed the role in 2012's Dredd. Although the latter was a box office disappointment, the Alex Garland scripted film has garnered a substantial cult following of fans, thanks in large part to its faithful representation of the original material. While the show is still in the early stages of development and no talent or network affiliation has yet been announced, Wednesday's news will be music to the ears of many who were left wanting more on-screen Dredd after the release of the 2012 film. Attached as executive producers of the new show are IM Global Television President Mark Stern, who developed Battlestar Galactica, Helix, and Defiance over at Sci-Fi, IM Global Television CEO Stuart Ford, and the owners of Rebellion, Jason and Chris Kingsley, who along with Ford were also executive producers on the 2012 Dredd film. This is one of the seminal sci-fi properties that seems to only become more and more relevant with age, said Stern in a statement. Not only is it a rich world with biting social commentary, but it is also fun as hell. As a fan of the comics in both films, it is a dream come true to be able to work with Jason and Chris in adapting this for television. We are very excited to be beginning the journey to get more of Judge Dredd's Mega City 1 on the television screen, said Jason and Chris Kingsley. Thanks to the legions of fans who have kept up pressure on social media and a lot of the background work and enthusiasm, we aim to make a big budget production that will satisfy both our vast comics audience and the even greater general screen watching public. And the show is going to be called Mega City One, if I'm not mistaken.
Nice.
So that news is huge.
Yes, it is.
Now, the only thing that could make that news more huge would be the announcement that Carl Urban is coming back to play Dredd in said series.
Yep.
I don't have my hopes up too high for that because, as we've seen time and again with the Flash on the big screen, with anything, that rarely happens.
Yes.
That you get to get your favorite character back being played by the favorite actor that you have for that role. But we'll see. They did not specifically announce any casting yet, so obviously they're going to save that announcement for another time. But that's huge news, and the fact that we're getting anything Dredd-related is really exciting because if they took nothing else from that movie, the fans who have loved that character and people who even have a passing familiarity with that character thought that Dredd was amazing.
Yes.
So they have the template. They have the template. And so now it's just how do we then take that and bring it into a TV series style show, but also be able to attract new viewers and stuff like that. I think my guess would be we'll be seeing more than Dredd in that series. Maybe we get a little bit more of Anderson.
Yep.
You know, obviously they have more room to breathe in those stories. So that will be really, really exciting. But I was excited about that news. You were excited about that news. And it got us to thinking, Matthew, because we mentioned a couple weeks ago our summer projects. What are we going to do for our summer reading and watching projects?
Yes.
And I think we've settled on an idea.
I think so.
We're going to call it the Summer of Dredd. Our summer reading and watching projects this summer are going to revolve entirely around Judge Dredd. So our summer reading project is going to be Judge Dredd, The Complete Case Files, Volume 1. Which you can go on Amazon right now, and I believe you can get the Kindle version for about $11, and I want to say the paperback version is no more than $15. Mm. And so that is a 320-page collection of the first Judge Dredd story. Yep. So that's going to be our summer reading project. We are going to make our way through that over the course of the summer. For our summer watching project, we are going to do essentially right now three things. Number one is we're going to watch the 1995 Judge Dredd movie again. Love it, hate it, or be completely indifferent to it. We're going to cover that as part of our summer project. We are also, of course, going to watch the 2012 Dredd movie as part of our summer project. But we are also going to watch the 2014 animated web series called Judge Dredd Super Fiend, I believe is the name of that. And that was a 6-episode miniseries that was sort of an origin story for Judge Death.
A crazy character.
Yes. And so, and it's done in the style of, I think it's done in the style of a 1990s Liquid Television Aeon Flux style.
Now I'm picturing
animation.
Yes, now I'm picturing it and absolutely right with that.
So what we're going to probably do is we'll probably do one of those each month. So if you think that our summer watching projects, you know, the core months are June, July, and August. So we'll do one of those three watching projects each month in June, July, and August. So that will be our watching projects for this year. And I'll put all of this in a post up on our website as well. And then we're going to be doing some other cool stuff, hopefully, as well. We might maybe have a couple of creator spotlights with people who were either involved with something having to do with Judge Dredd or very influenced by the fact that they grew up reading Judge Dredd. So we're hoping to do a few interviews around that. We also have had over the years a couple of video games that have come out related to Judge Dredd. And for those that listen to the show know that I also do the Co-op Critics blog and podcast and things like that. So there may be a little bit of a crossover there with some of the Judge Dredd video game stuff. And Matt and I also talked about the musical side of not only the Judge Dredd movies, but the games and stuff as well, and bands that have been influenced by Judge Dredd.
And it's so, very obvious. There's been a lot that have
for
been.
Sure.
Whether or not it's, you know, you think obviously when you think music and Judge Dredd, you think Anthrax, I Am the Law. That's always the first one you go to. But there were so many other bands that might not have had the aggressive style music, but they would have Judge Dredd on their guitars,
sure.
Judge Dredd t-shirts. The first time I ever saw Judge Dredd was because of the band Heavy Petton. They two of the guys had Judge Dredd shirts on. One was the first comic cover, and I'm thinking, I don't know what that is, but I need to get that because that looks so freaking cool.
Absolutely.
That is what started my love of Judge Dredd. And then all of a sudden, Anthrax puts out a song.
That was what started my love of Judge Dredd. And I would love to hear from our listeners who are also happen to be metalheads if I Am the Law was their introduction to Judge Dredd. Because for me, it was.
Yep.
I didn't know who this was. When did Among the Living come out? 86, 87, something like
I believe.
That? So 1987, I was 13 years old. And I listened to Among the Living and I'm reading the liner notes and I'm seeing this Judge Dredd stuff. So for me, that was my introduction to Judge Dredd. That's how I was first introduced to the character. Now, the character had been around for 10 years by that point.
And that's the cool thing, too, is that it's an American band teaching a 13-year-old kid in Enfield,
for
Connecticut,
sure.
about an old British comic book character.
Awesome, right?
Yeah.
So that was my in to the world of Judge Dredd. I am by no means knowledgeable about the world of Judge Dredd. Mm. I'm looking forward to delving into the case files and learning more about that world. I know some of the highlights, as we all do, if you've read comics over the years, but I think this will be really fun to kind of delve into that because I think what they said about the TV show is that we're looking at probably 2 years. We're looking at probably 2019, I think, is when the TV show is probably going to come out. So this is our summer to really jump into the origins and the early days of Judge Dredd, and also to see what some of the adaptations on the big screen and in some cases the little screen have been so far. So that is going to be our summer reading and watching project. It is the Summer of Dredd. Hopefully that is exciting to hear for people that listen to the show. I think that's going to be really fun for us to delve into. And again, that stuff is very accessible.
Yep.
The case files you can get anywhere. You can go to drivethroughcomics.com.
I was just going to say drivethrough has a lot of
Judge
Dredd.
And you can order the digital version of the first case files of Judge Dredd. That is on there for sure because I believe I picked up my digital version from drivethroughcomics. So definitely accessible. Obviously, the movies are accessible, and I believe the entire animated series is free to watch on YouTube. So we will put links to that stuff when the time comes. But we just wanted to announce it so that people can go out and at least get their hands on that Case Files Volume 1. Our goal is to start the first or second week of June.
And it's kind of bringing back, when you talked about the Summer of Dredd, it made me think back to when we were younger, listening to 107 WCCC out of Hartford, Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
And every summer would be the 107 days of summer. And
right.
That was like, we hear the ad, the kickoff is here. So that's getting excited about summer.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. And I think that's going to be a really fun project. So let us know what you think about that. And also, as I said, you should be able to get your hands on it, no problem. But if people are having trouble with that, you know, let us know. I'm pretty sure also that you, well, it is. There's a Kindle version, so you can definitely get it on Comixology as well. And you can always go to the 2000 AD website and get a copy of that there too. So there you go. That is our news for this week. We are about to jump into our comics for the week. Of course, we have to mention our sponsor, which is Viking Oils. And you can go to VikingOilsLLC.com to find out more about the current seasonal beard products that they have in stock, which I will be availing myself of very soon.
Yes, I've got to get in touch with Gary.
Because we're getting to dire straits now.
It's getting panicky. And I was thinking that as you pulled in today going, oh, I didn't talk to Gary this week.
As I mentioned last week, I shaved the sides of the beard. So now I just have this mangy, super long goatee going on. And I love it.
It's a mohawk for the neck.
I'm probably going to keep this through the summer. And I'm very excited, but it's a little unwieldy.
Yeah.
So I need to figure out the right combination of products to make that behave a little bit better. But I'm looking forward to taking this thing to the Metallica concert next week.
And interesting that the we're going to be doing a character that has nothing to do with beards whatsoever, because Judge Dredd has a nicely shaven chin because that's all you see.
Right. Well, maybe sometimes a little stubble if he's out stopping crime.
A vacation.
Exactly. He aims to have that clean shaven chin. So there you go. So that is your news. That is your sponsor. Now we are going to get into books this week. And the first book that I am going to talk about here is Scarlet Spider number one, Ben Reilly. Scarlet Spider number one, written, Matthew, by Mr. Peter David, with pencils by Mr. Mark Bagley.
Very nice.
So you've got two veteran Spider-Man creators that are on this book. Inks by John Dell, colors by Jason Keith, letters by veteran letterer Joe Caramagna.
Love that guy.
Always happy to see his name on a Spidey book. And the editor on this one is Nick Lowe. Now, you might remember from our coverage of the most recent event with the Jackal that Ben Reilly was in fact the Jackal in the most recent Spider-Man event. And at the end of that event, he seemingly perhaps dissolved away or died or whatever, but we knew better. We knew that he was out there. And of course, we find out in this book that he is. And as we open up the first issue, which by the way, has a nice cover that is a tribute to the old Scarlet Spider costume with the hoodie, which is my favorite.
Yep.
And I really hope that that makes its way back, although I have a hard time believing it actually will. But we open up the first page here and you see Ben Reilly in a brand new Scarlet Spider costume, and he's kind of standing on the torch of the Statue of Liberty. And he's talking about, you know, so many people come through here to begin a new life, to find a new chance to start over again. Why not me? Why not Ben Reilly? Why can't I do that? You know, and as he's talking, someone else is kind of talking to him. And you see he's having this sort of inner dialogue. And then the camera zooms back a little bit and you see that he's not at all in New York. He is at the New York Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, because the streets that he's looking over is like the main strip in Las Vegas. That's where he is. And he's there to see someone, but you really don't know who that is yet. But this conversation that he's having, you know, Ben is saying, I don't have anybody. I don't have anybody with me right now. And this person's saying, no, that's not true. You have me. And Ben's saying, that you don't count. And you look down and it's a little version of himself. It's a little version of Ben Reilly in the old Scarlet Spider costume, and he's talking to himself. So clearly, his transition and all the trouble that he went through, essentially what we had found is that the Jackal was kind of like recloning him and rebirthing him time and time and time and time again, trying to perfect his formula, if I remember correctly. And it kind of drove Ben a little bit insane. So this Ben Reilly is certainly still a clone of Peter Parker, but he also has a very sort of dark streak, and he is not that stable. So he's having a conversation with himself, and he's saying, look, I do have a plan. I know why I'm here, and I have to go find this person. But first, I have nothing. I'm renting a cheap hotel room. I have no money or anything. I got to figure out what I'm going to do. And he looks down, and he sees that there is a mugging about to happen in an alleyway, and he's like, oh, thank goodness. This is one thing I can always count on. So he jumps down as you see a woman who is about to get mugged by a guy wielding a knife. And all of a sudden he creeps up behind him and says, hey, do you have a costume? And the guy's like, what are you talking about? A costume, you know, or tights or armor or anything. You know, like, you're the first bad guy that I'm fighting in Las Vegas and you're kind of underwhelming. And the guy turns around and whips out a gun and he's like, oh, okay, well, now we're doing better. So he kicks the crap out of this guy and ends up snapping this dude's arm. And the woman who was about to get mugged is like looking on in horror, because this is a Spider-Man that is not pulling any punches with these guys. He picks up the dude's gun and he's like, this is a nice gun. It's got a nice heft to it. Where'd you get it? And the guy's like, put that down. You don't use guns. You're Spider-Man. And he shoots the guy in the kneecap. So the woman is like, what is going on here? And he's like, all right, let's get out of here. We'll leave this guy be. And he takes the gun with him and they walk out of the alley. And the woman's saying, oh, how will I ever repay you? Thank you so much. And he's like, give me $100. She's like, what? Give me $100. That's how you can repay me. She's like, I only have 50. I don't even have a job right now, but I'll get you, I'll pay you the rest later. And he's like, okay, but I'm going to hold you to that. So you see that he's now saving people for money.
Yeah.
He takes $50 from her and he gives her the gun. And he says, you should keep this on yourself because you never know who you're going to run into. So after that encounter, which already I think shows you that we are dealing with a Ben Reilly that is very different than what we've sort of seen in the past. He doesn't have the same noble aspirations that we saw the first time around with Ben Reilly, where he wanted to, you know, really live up to the legacy of Spider-Man. He wants nothing to do with that now. He's there for a particular reason.
Slightly unstable.
And it seems like getting more unstable as time goes on. So now we go to San Francisco, and there is a woman named Rita who used to work with the Jackal. She was part of New U Technologies and that whole storyline that was happening in Spider-Man. And all of a sudden, she's going to her car in this garage And who shows up but the Jackal, wearing his mask and everything, the sort of Egyptian-like mask that he was wearing during that series. And she's like, oh, my goodness, how are you even back here? And he's like, well, you know, I told you I'd come back. Do you remember where I said I was going? And she's like, why would you ask me that? And he whips off the mask, and it turns out that it's Kane, who is another clone of Spider-Man. Yep. And Kane is saying, I knew that the Jackal was alive. I knew that Ben Reilly was alive, and now you just, you know, inadvertently told me that he was, so tell me where he is. And so you see in this quick interlude that Kane has taken it upon himself to hunt down Ben Reilly because he knows that Ben Reilly is still out there. While in the meantime, Peter Parker has kind of moved on because he's got other things to worry about. Kane is now on the trail, so Kane looks like will be a part of this book. So we go back to Vegas, and you see that what was happening is that Ben wants to get into this casino that is owned by a woman named Cassandra Mercury. Now, she is a very powerful woman who is not only rich, but has amassed a lot of power through connections and being able to sort of blackmail people. She's almost like a kingpin type character, very powerful figure in the Las Vegas area, but she's also someone who had lost her daughter, and Ben Reilly had brought her daughter back when he was the Jackal as one of the clones through New You, and that did not end well. So she's now lost her daughter twice because of Ben Reilly. But he shows up here because he needs her help. And so as soon as he shows up in the casino, he's trying to figure out a way to get to see her without showing off his powers, because the one thing he doesn't want to do is he doesn't want to get caught on camera or any security footage using his powers or looking like a Spider-Man, because he doesn't want Peter to know that he's still alive. So he's kind of trying to stay low key. So there's this great scene where he goes into the casino, and there is an older woman who is at the slot machines, as we've seen many times when we go to Mohegan Sun or Foxwoods or anything, who is just dialed in 100%. Yes. And this old woman's husband is trying to convince her, we have to go home. You've been here for days. Like, you know, we don't know what we're going to, how do I get you out of here? And Ben walks over and he's like, your name's not May, is it? And the husband is like, no, her name is June. And he's like, okay, close enough. Stop harassing my aunt. And the guy's like, what are you talking about? She's an only child. She doesn't have any nieces or nephews. But he basically scares the husband away and decides he's going to adopt this woman as his aunt.
Oh, boy.
Because he doesn't have anybody.
Yeah.
So as he's trying to have a conversation with her, these guys break in to rob the casino, and he gets involved in that. And the security director for Cassandra Mercury sees him, like, smash a gun in half and decides to take him up to see her because he knows that he's dealing with some sort of a metahuman or a mutant or an inhuman. And so that's how he ends up getting in to see her. But when he does, the first thing that she says is, I'm going to kill you because you're the one that cost me my daughter with your Jackal nonsense. And obviously that didn't work out well. So as the first issue comes to an end, he's having another gun pulled on him as he is about to be killed by Cassandra Mercury. So very interesting first issue.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kind of dark humor in this book. And you can tell that that's what Peter David is going for here, is a slightly unhinged Ben Reilly. And to me, it makes it more interesting because you don't have any idea what he's going to do next. And he is talking to different versions of himself as he's kind of going about his business. So interesting book. Of course, Mark Bagley's art is fantastic. So if you are a Bagley fan, then you are going to absolutely love this book. The colors are great too. And of course, Joe Caramagna's lettering. I mean, what have we not said about that at this point in time? The guy's just a master at his craft. So Scarlet Spider number one, definitely worth picking up. And as it is a spider book, you knew I was going to get the first issue, but I will also be picking up the next one.
And so did they. They knew you'd be picking this one up too.
They knew as soon as they put a cover out that had the hoodie on it. Oh, we got Brian.
We got him. So last week also was Free Comic Book Day, and there were some books that came out. One of the books that I was the most excited about was Captain Canuck from Chapter House Year One, and this is the first of three. So what they are doing is they are starting the series with this issue being the first issue of the run. The next issue will be number two and then number three and so on. So I love that that's what you're going to do. This is how we've always talked about introducing a character. Now, a lot of people know about Captain Canuck, don't know enough about him as a character. And it's really interesting that at the beginning of it, Jay Baruchel, who is one of the writers, has on the front page of the inside cover, it says, from the desk of Jay. And he goes through why he's excited about writing this character, why this character is important, and also how they want to bring the world of the Chapterverse together. And the Chapterverse is all the characters from Chapter House Comics.
That's awesome.
Chapter House is a Canadian company. And so this story is written by Jay and Kalman Androvsky. I'm hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. And Marcus Toe is the artist. Colors by Marco Pingoda. And Andrew Thomas is the letterer. Cover by David Finch, who we all know who David Finch is. And Aaron Fieldman and Tony White are the editors. So chapterhouse.ca if you want to check out some of the great stuff going on. And then I love when you see in the bottom when it says Captain Canuck, created by Richard Comley and Ron Letchman, or Leshman. Now, Richard, if you didn't already know, if you've not been a fan of the show since day one, Richard Comley was the first interview that I ever did for Secret Identity. And Captain Canuck has been one of those characters that the first time I ever saw it in 1979 at Pigeon's Pharmacy, I became hooked. And I just love the character. I love the fact that he represents Canada, much like Captain America, well, up until now, represents the United States. And I've even seen a lot of comic book people talking about, hey, if you don't like where Captain America's going, why don't you just look up north and look at Captain Canuck? So we start out, and this is a year one where we've got Afghanistan and we have the Canadian crew that is helping out the American coalition. So there's Canadian soldiers up there, and you see that there are some bad guys that are kind of working the system, that they are doing some things. They're taking kids. They're doing some bad stuff. And you don't necessarily see that it's soldiers, but you do see that soldiers are helping this go on. So you've got some bad guys within the good ranks. And, you know, so you start out with this girl being taken and this guy saying, you promised you that the daughters would be safe. And he's like, look, we need more people out in the fields. You soon find out that they are doing, they're growing poppy fields. This is Afghanistan, and poppy fields, poppy flowers, poppy plants are used for opium. Mm-hmm. So this is a huge drug trade thing going on. And, so the story is called Sorcery, part one, We Are Wolves. And as this person is about to get shot and killed by some soldiers that are kind of guarding this thing, all of a sudden somebody shows up out of nowhere in like a red suit. And all you do is see just red all over the body, and the bullets are just bouncing off, and people are freaking out and they leave. So as you now have the people that were doing the shooting, trying to get more people, they're now with their bad dudes. And they're saying, yeah, some guy in red showed up. We were trying to take these kids. We know we need more workers in the field. We don't know what's going on right now. And you see that one of the people is an army high-ranking official. And this guy is saying, look, whatever's going on, you've got my cooperation. We'll take care of this guy. We'll get rid of him, because this is now starting to cause a little bit of a problem. And you have this younger kid who's the one who's saying, I saw it. I shot at him. The bullets bounced off of him. This is what's going on. I didn't see his face, but he's bright red, and we need to take care of him. And Sorcery means red. That's a red man. That's what that means. So you turn the page, and you have a Humvee that is out on patrol, and it's a bunch of Canadian soldiers, and you've got a younger woman who's in the passenger side of it, and they're driving by, and you're seeing in a fenced area, you're seeing the poppies that are growing, and you're seeing people out there digging them up and using them. Now, I don't and cannot begin to even discuss or wonder what other use of a poppy plant you would have. I'm thinking maybe poppy seed bagels. I don't understand. But, you know, there is use for poppies.
Maybe there's a bagel operation going on. Are you sure that's not what they were doing?
That could be.
They're like, why are you ruining our bagel operation?
Yeah, this is big. So as the soldiers are driving through, they're having conversations in there. There's a wounded one, and they're bringing him to a medical facility. So they all get out. Somebody comes up and says, hey, you know what? Get your group, and you need to go talk to these guys over here. So they go over, and everybody's dressing very casual. So there's not anybody in, like, full military garb. The young girl that they really talk to, because they want this young girl, they talk to her, and they pull her aside and say, you know, you have got an incredible record as a sniper. And we think we could use you in a project going on. And he kind of sells her on something that's going on. We're trying to help the children. We're trying to do all this stuff. And she's like, all right, well, you know what? Maybe I'll help you guys out. And he's like, well, this is a very quiet military operation. You can't say anything about it to anybody. So you go and you see one of the other guys that was there that was not really necessarily gung-ho about this new mission is in talking to his friend that's in the hospital. And his friend is saying, hey, you know what? This is weird, but they keep taking people in and out of here. Like, there's a guy that was laying here before, and now all of a sudden he's gone, and I swear I hear screaming. And the guy's like, well, what kind of drugs you on here? What are they giving you? He goes, I'm not taking any of the drugs because I'm not trusting anybody here. So he goes into another room, and he sees that there are some dudes in there that are all on a table, and he looks at their villagers. And he's looking, going, this is kind of weird that all these people are in here. So he's wondering what is going on. What is the sort of genesis of this problem that's happening? And you see that he's saying, I couldn't let that stand. Somebody's doing something seriously wrong here. And he says, and if they're headed back to Qatar Kala, so am I. So you see him dig out underneath the fence and start running. And as he runs, he gets into his red suit. And meanwhile, you've got these bad guys that are doing some bad stuff. They're grabbing some people. And as this is happening, there's a shootout. And all of a sudden, this figure in red shows up, covers up a kid. And as he's getting shot, the shots are hitting him pretty point blank. And he can't figure out what's going on with that one. So he takes off. The kids show up. The army shows up. Everybody's there. And then the red guy runs away. And then the next day, this is pretty interesting because you see the girl sniper who's eating her food, and this dude just walks up to her, pulls up his shirt. He's got three bullet hole marks, or like where the bullet, like if it hit a Kevlar vest, but sure, still did the impression. He's like, what the hell is this? And she goes, oh, what the hell? And he pulls his head down. You see that it is a guy that was visiting the friend in the hospital, and he goes, you shot me. And she goes, no, not really. And he goes, did you know that that was me? And then she goes, not at first, but when I shot you, I kind of realized it was you. And he's like, what are you doing? What are you working with these people? And she goes, hey, I'm under orders to do this. And she goes, what's with the red pajamas? And I think that she's speaking in French. So, you know, these other guys are the English-speaking Canadians, and I think she's French-speaking because she's like, orders, like home. And he's like, look, I don't understand what you're doing, but the reason I have to wear that red suit is because if I'm out there, I'm AWOL, and I know some bad things are going on, and I know that we need to do this. So then all of a sudden, this guy comes in saying, you saw him, Arsenal. You saw what's going on. You had a beat on him. Why'd you let him get away? And he goes, well, you know, he got away. It was a bad thing. And she goes, you know, so he says, you know what? All right, we got another mission. Let's fall out in 10. And as the story progresses, you see that this young kid that he saved a couple times all of a sudden gets a rocket launcher and stands right behind him. And he's talking to the kid, the guy going, you're a monster. You're the red monster, and I'm going to kill you. And he's like, look, kid, I'm not a monster. I'm trying to help you. And then you see as this conversation's going on, he's now in the crosshairs of the young girl that was in his platoon saying, you're a stupid, stupid man. And that's where it'll be continued in the next episode. Next issue, you have a full-page ad, which, Brian, I thought this was really cool. I bet you'll get a kick out of this. It is a chapter house picture, and it looks like a party going on.
Oh, nice.
But it is all the characters from all their comics.
That's cool.
All just sitting kind of and relaxing in a chalet.
I mean, I know it feels like everybody's doing a shared universe these days, but I kind of like that. Like, the idea that stories don't necessarily have to cross over yep. one another, but could exist in the same universe, to me, just gives you more of a connection to those characters overall.
So you've got Freelance is a character or a comic, Agents of Pact, The Pitiful Human Lizard, which is something I think I need to pick up, Captain Canuck, Phantom Ma, Northgard, and then The Northern Light. And then the next part of this, Brian, is our good friend, Mr. Dan Parent, and his friend Fernando Ruiz with another installment of Die, Kitty, Die.
Now, is it a part of the one they've already released, or is this a new one?
This is a new story. So it is a 5 or 6 page story of a beach party that goes completely awry. Now, if you're not familiar with Die, Kitty, Die, shame on you for one. Secondly, you need to pick this up because this is the story of a Archie-type character that was told her comic book is going to die, and she finds out they are really going to kill her. She's a witch, and it is sort of her adventures on staying alive and trying to stay one step ahead of everybody. Now, all the characters that have ever been created by this company are all living creatures and living characters, and they're spoofs on Harvey Comics. Is pretty much what it is
right.
Because you have a kid that's like Richie Rich and his dog. You've got, instead of Hot Stuff, the Little Devil, his name's Little Satan. you've got the three ghosts. It is an amazing and fun book, lovingly drawn. I have the hardcover collection of the first, I think, three or four issues, and it is a book that I need to get the rest of because it is fantastic. So if you didn't pick it up, head to your comic store. I went to a store today and saw that they still had some free Comic Book Day issues available. You still might be able to get this Captain Canuck one.
Very nice, Matthew. Well, I'm going to go over to Titan Comics now for a book called Warhammer 40K Dawn of War Number 1. Now, the Warhammer universe is one that it has been around for years and years at this point in time. Space Marines, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
I am not familiar at all with the Warhammer universe.
I know it just from working in a store and watching everybody build the figures, make them, and then play them.
I know you've got your Space Marines. I know you've got your fantasy races that exist in this space-like setting, your orcs, your elves, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So that is super cool to me. But anytime a new series launches, much like with the X-Men, I want to see, is this accessible to new people?
Yep.
Is this something I can just pick up and read? So this series is written by Ryan O'Sullivan, pencils and inks by Daniel Enduro, colors by Kevin Enhart, and letters by Rob Steen. And it basically is sort of a kind of a missing in action story. As you start off, you are on this, you're on the ground in the middle of a battle where you have these humongously armored Space Marines. And if you've ever seen the Warhammer stuff, like you have... It almost looks like everybody's wearing Hulkbuster armor.
Mm-hmm.
That's how big the armor is for these Marines. And they're battling these heavily armored orcs. And the orcs look like they escaped from a Mad Max movie.
Yeah.
And the Space Marines are just, again, they look like they're all wearing like Tony Stark Hulkbuster armor. And they are taking these orcs out. And they basically rally, you know, the troops and they take these guys down and they protected what looks like almost like a big... cathedral style area. And so you have the main commander there whose name is Gabriel Angelos, I believe. He's saying, you know, it's rare to see greenskins fleeing from battle. Enjoy it, brothers. You've earned it. And as he's kind of telling the troops, you guys did a great job. You drove these guys away. He kind of turns and looks over his shoulder back at the area that they just protected. And he looks like he's distracted by something. And then he turns around to the guys and he says, Cyrus, I want you with me. Oliver, you press on against those orcs that just fled. So he sends most of the guys after these orcs, and he takes one man with him. And then this Oliver guy who was sent ahead, you see him like the next day on the ship that's orbiting the planet, and he's explaining to his superior officer, that guy didn't come back. That Angelos guy that sent us all after the other orcs, he never came back from wherever he was going. And he says, let me go and find him. And the commanding officer is saying, you don't have the experience to undertake this kind of a mission. So one of the other sergeants says, well, let me go. I know this Gabriel Angelos. I've served with him before. I can help him track this guy down. And they say, very well, Tarkus, you can go with them. And the commanding officer is explaining to them, you have to understand, our whole chapter of Space Marines, like, this guy's our heart and soul, this Gabriel Angelos. If we lose him, that's a huge blow for us. We cannot lose this guy. You guys have to find him. And so they get in a ship and they head back down to the planet surface. And as they're heading down, an orc who's down there fires a bazooka and ends up taking off the wing of their ship. And now they're in crash mode. But you see they've got a whole compartment full of Space Marines with them. And they have this level of Space Marine. And I apologize for not knowing what they're called. But they're basically like robot suits, these giant robot suits. And so they have almost like a droid. You know, they have this this droid with them, and the droid's kind of saying, do you want me to take over flying the ship? Do you want me to land us safely? And the two sergeants are saying, no, we got it. We can handle this. We've had a crash landing before. So they get in, they land there, but they tell the robot to stay with the ship and to repair it. But the funniest part about their landing is that you have this orc who's pretty proud of himself that he took down this ship, right, with one bazooka. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of strolling over to it to see what the carnage is. And then as soon as he gets over and the main compartment starts to open, there's a whole contingent of Space Marines there and they just blow him away. So the poor orc is just immediately taken out. So once they get boots on the ground, they're figuring out what's the best way to go after, you know, what's the trail? How can we find out where this guy is? So they end up heading down toward the cathedral area that the soldiers were defending the last time they were down there, but they don't run into more orcs. They run into these Eldar, which I believe are the elf version of warriors on this planet. So now the Eldar are showing up and they've got all of these, they've got swords that look like they're made out of bone. They've got these robes that they're wearing with all these different symbols and sigils on them. And there's a huge fight that ensues. They end up driving away these elves, and they end up finding the one man, Cyrus, that the guy had taken with him the day before. And they're like, oh, where's the commander? You know, where is he? Where is Gabriel? And he says, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but he went down into the catacombs and he wouldn't let me come with him. And I was just kind of holding out as long as I can. He never came back. So now they're finding that he went by himself wherever he went. And the soldier is explaining wherever he was going, he was saying that he was called there. Something was calling him there. And so he wouldn't let anybody come with him, and he went. And so they kind of have another conversation about the fact that we cannot lose this guy. Whatever is happening down there, we need to go down into the catacombs and find him. And so you see them getting a small group together to go down into the catacombs. And then over on a ridge, you see that there's a whole contingent of orcs that are watching this whole thing happen. And basically, they're going to go in after these guys behind them and look to take them out. And that's the way the first issue ends. So what I really liked about this book is that you don't have to know anything about the Warhammer 40K universe to understand what's happening in this book. It is a contingent of soldiers. One of their high-ranking officers, who is kind of the heart and soul of their unit, was missing. And they're going in after him with a small team. It's like the makings of an 80s action movie. Like and the first issue really draws you into that, because clearly they're in a lot more trouble than they thought they were when they landed there, because there's a lot more orcs there than they ever thought. And so, very cool first issue. Again, this is from Titan Comics. This is apparently tying into the upcoming Dawn of War 3 game that's going to be coming out, that's set in the Warhammer 40K universe. So pretty cool, both as a video game tie-in, but also as a standalone book. So worth checking out if you want to see some spacefaring fantasy races.
To get your fill of, Starship Troopers.
There you go.
Very Starship Troopers.
You know what? I agree with that. It is very Starship Troopers. It's kind of like over the top action and gore and that kind of stuff.
When I used to watch the guys play it and paint up their kits to get ready, that's always what it reminded me of.
Yep, I can totally see that.
So our final book is a new one that just came out, and it is a team-up of the Batman and the Shadow. It's a DC Dynamite book, and written by Scott Snyder and Steve Orlando. Riley Rossi is the artist. Ivan Plasenka is the colorist. Clem Roberts does the letters. So when you read this and you start it out, this doesn't really seem to fit in any of the DC current Batman universes. It doesn't seem to fit anywhere, just simply because of the way some of the villains look and some of the situations. Like, it doesn't feel like this could fit in anywhere. So you can't read this as anything other than almost an Elseworld, or this is something going on.
Right. You just have to kind of accept going in that this is its own thing.
And just enjoy it. So you have a castle on top of a hill. And you have somebody talking, saying, you know, you've climbed a long way from the streets of Gotham. And I remember the first time you came here and, you know, you said, oh, Deckard, treat me. You're the world, train me. You're the world's greatest manhunter. That's what you called me. I, you know, didn't want to train you, but I reluctantly did. And you have that same look on your face that you did then. You have it now. And he's like, so how can I help you, Bruce? And he's got a sword to his face. And he's Bruce says, you know, teach me. You need to teach me, because I found a mystery that even I can't undo. So you turn the page and you are at Arkham Asylum, Gotham County. And it's really interesting, because you've got a guy and he's kind of talking to himself, saying, you know, the people here, they're bad people, but they do need to be treated with respect. It's just human decency. It doesn't matter what they did. Everybody needs to have a good meal. And you see him go up to Poison Ivy's thing and, you know, slides under the door. It's a meal. And he's saying that it is some sort of flower thing. And then you go up to Maxi Zeus. Now, this is where you get the kind of the first thing, like, Maxi Zeus looks like Zeus. You know, it's not sort of the way he's looked lately. So he's like, hey, I got your food for you. And then he goes up and there is Harvey Dent, who is screaming at him, going, who the hell are you? And he's like, well, you know, I brought you your food and here you go. And I hope you enjoy it. And he's like, just send it on through. And then he goes up to Dr. Freeze, Mr. Freeze. And he says, you know, I got you some fish that was caught in weather and water that was 30.4 degrees, much below freezing. And, you know, and Dr. Freeze is like, thank you for always treating me with such respect. And he says, it's the only way that I can. So now the guy is home and he's petting his dog and the dog's running around and the dog's like a little dachshund, and he's got like that wheel cart because he can't use his back legs or something. So he puts the dog down. The dog's rolling around everywhere. And he's like, you know what? So I think I'm going to, you know, do a little reading, eat some Chinese food, then I'm going to go to bed. And he's hearing his messages.
Sounds like you on the when you're done with your work for the week.
Yeah.
You got a couple days off.
Grab the cats and just read some comics.
Yep.
And Chinese food. So he's hearing his messages. And you kind of look at the guy at first and think he's like a little bit of a loser. But then you've got this woman calling saying, hey, I really had a great time on our date. Hopefully I'll get to see you again. I'm really excited to see what's going to happen next. And he's looking at that. So he starts picking up his phone to make a call. All of a sudden, somebody comes from the shadows, chokes him, kills him dead. Chinese food falls on the ground. And there's the dog with his little wheel cart going through the Chinese food spilled. Next day, or hours later, I should say, you've got Officer Montoya there. You've got Bullock there, and they're going through everything. And they're going through and seeing what's going on. And as they're looking at this body, which has blood on the hands, blood all over the face, blood on the floor, blood splattered on the wall, they're looking around. They're like, we're kind of having a hard time figuring some of this out. We're wondering what's going on. And then Batman shows up, and he goes, I need to be alone with the body. And then Montoya looks up and goes, oh, you the commissioner now? And he goes, I just need a few minutes. So she leaves and says, you know what? Don't be here when I get back. So you're seeing that it's not necessarily the Gotham we know, because there's sort of an uneasy truce with the two of them. It's more cordial than what you have here. So Batman puts down something, and it's like it's this thing that all of a sudden it's like it starts showing pictures all over the place. And you're seeing that there's parasites on the floor. You're seeing that there is certain sorts of DNA everywhere. And he's like, Lamont Cranston, the first murder at Smith Street Arms. Why you? And then you're thinking, Lamont Cranston, that's the Shadow. How does that happen? So as he's going and he's asking the Bat computer all these questions, and they're like, well, we're having a hard time getting a match. And he's like, okay, sorry, Bat Ops. Repeat the cover, Lamont Cranston. And then you're hearing laughing in the background. And you turn around and you see that the Shadow shows up. And the Shadow's there, grabs a knife, has a knife, tries to stab at him. They have a little bit of a fight going on. Batman ends up on the ground, jumps back up. And as they're fighting, he's like, you know, you need to tell me a man is dead. I don't know why you're here, but you're here. And it doesn't look like you stray very far from the dark. Because every time that they fight, it always seems like the Shadow is trying to get himself into a darker angle in a dark corner.
As shadows do.
And he's like, Patrice would be proud of you, Bruce. And then he's like, wait a minute, how did you know about Patrice? And he's like, the letter? No way. There's no way that you could know any of that. And then you see that the shadow lands full shot. And he says, the Shadow knows.
Of course he does.
And you got all the laughing. So now he's back in the Batcave, and it is a very crude-looking Batcave. So he's in there, and he's going through all the things, and he's like, Lamont Cranston, I need all the information. Nothing's coming up. And he's saying, no fingerprints. There is no anything. I don't understand this. I don't get this. Then you have the Shadow on the screen, like he has a picture of the Shadow. And he's saying, well, that's kind of interesting. But then he sees that Lamont Cranston was alive in the early part of the 1900s and died in 1968. So he's like, that doesn't seem right. And then it says here, Lamont Cranston died of cancer. So he starts finding some of the associates that he has had and goes through and he's looking, talking to people. And he's like, hey, you know what? Cranston could have faked his death. I don't know what's going on with that guy. And then he goes to a grave site and he's saying, you know, Cliff Marlin, master pilot from the Great War. You died the same year as Cranston. So then he gets on his Matches Malone outfit, said, you know what? I'm going to go on the town and take a look and see what's going on. So as he's talking to the driver, she's saying, oh, yeah, you know, my dad's been buried here. You know, he drove for Cranston for years. So now you're wondering, wait a minute, what is going on here where you have all this stuff going on? He finally goes and meets with somebody. They start talking and she's like, oh, no, Lamont couldn't be alive anymore because, you know, he died a long time ago. We were together in the 30s. And you're seeing that there's more and more of a mystery. He gets upstairs, starts looking. He gets on an elevator, and he starts going to another floor. And the guy, the bellhop, looks kind of feeble. And he's like, hey, you know what? I always remember a face, so I don't know who you are. Welcome to the hotel. If there's anything that I can do, you know, he's like, oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And he goes, can you get me to the to floor 731, please? And he's like, oh, right away. Or that's the room. So he's up in the elevator, and then as the elevator starts, this dude that doesn't look like anything turns on him, starts fighting with him, Matches Malone headbutts him, and as he headbutts him, loses the mustache. The wig's getting ready to come undone. You see that it's Batman. And he's like, no one goes to the sanctum. He said to stop you. And he's like, what's the sanctum? What's going on? And he said, the master told me. So he takes him out. He gets upstairs. He's looking around. And he's just – it's like The Shining. He's seeing all these pictures of this one guy, 1930, 1970. Yep. It's not making any sense whatsoever. He goes into a room, and it's a room of these floating masks that I'll show you, Brian. It's completely creepy. These floating masks are over there, and he's like, wait a minute. And he's looking, and a lot of the masks, the identities are Lamont Cranston.
I see.
So he's thinking, this is completely
confusing
me. That
makes me think of Darkman.
Yes. He goes into a room. He sees all these weapons there. He sees a sword, or he sees a photo of a sword. And then as you start to finish the story, you have Batman going up, and you go to the modern time of Batman up on that mountain, and the sword that he saw the picture of is now being pointed in his face.
Huh.
And that is where this issue ends. So we have that, and that is going on, and it was an amazing, amazing issue.
Fantastic. Well, that is going to wrap it up for our new books this week, and that is also going to wrap it up for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So before I sign off, remember, you want to go out and get the Volume 1 of the Judge Dredd Case Files to start our summer reading project, which is going to be coming up in a couple weeks, and check the website for more info about that. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Letendry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.